All right, folks, welcome to the Musky 360 podcast. Jaybird, can you hear me? Can you see me?
10-4, I can see you, Steve.
6x6 or whatever you say.
5x5.
5x5, live from Jay's house.
Yep.
We're sitting here in beautiful, cold and windy Saint Germain.
Yeah, it's cold and windy. It's a taste of fall.
A taste of fall, which we're going to get to in a second because the timing is impeccable. Fall is upon us. I've finally returned from my northern adventures, months of trekking across Canada.
You were gone for a long time,
baby. Caught a bunch of fish, yep. Learned a bunch of stuff, catching the biggins, you know. Caught a big walleye. What do you know?
Yeah, I heard just, about that this morning.
You know, having some breakfast, talking about the big walleye. But no. Laid the proverbial wood to some fish and you know, definitely got to hang out with some good folks. And very, very fun. It is fall, whether you want to admit it or not. It is here. It is clear. Jay is a podcast host, and he is ready to talk about fall here in a second. Anyway, what am I doing in Wisconsin? We're not fishing, but we are. Hold on.
I was hoping you'd do that. Can you hear that? Can you hear me now?
Can you hear that? You got that 4x4?
Oh.
That thing. Mm-hmm. We are filming. We've got some instructional stuff that's going to come out over the winter to keep you entertained. Late fall stuff. We'll probably cover some. Maybe Jay will probably do something on some simple sucker stuff. If you're starting, I know you're going, oh my goodness. He's about to say the S word, suckers. It's coming.
Yeah, right around the corner.
Yeah.
So a big temp drop later this week around here.
Right. And so if you're thinking about fishing suckers. If you're starting to think about that, we got the video from last year. We were like, we could do another video, but that pretty much covers it all. Look at the channel. There's a video from last fall. I'll probably put it on the top of the app again on some of your like basics and how to have a better time fishing suckers for sure.
Yeah.
Because it's coming. It's getting chilly. It was chilly in Canada. There's a lot of cold days and a lot of the wind, things are picking up, so it's starting to become a thing here. So whether we want to admit it or not, summer is going bye-bye. We're going to have to dial in. But back to the clickety-clack-clack.
There she is.
You'd think it was a rattle, but it's not. It is the very special, very hard to get, very exclusive, custom-made bait that we're going to have very shortly to feast your eyes upon, that is dialed in for fall, right? Dialed in for fall. And when I think fall, I start thinking trolling, but we better cover before I get carried away here. The comings and the goings at the Muskie Shop. What do we got going on? I actually have cell signal for the first time in forever. Hold on. I can actually see what's happening now.
Okay.
Look at this. Savage Gear 3D Crosstail. What in earth is that?
That's the new one. It's coming soon.
Yeah.
I'm not sure when.
You
but,
got that.
It could be early September.
That looks funky.
Yep.
It's got some vibe to it. Well, there's a 9 and a what? And a 12.
12's big.
12.
Got some weight to it.
Biggie also, boy.
It'll be close to throwing like a pounder.
There you go.
Yeah, that's something that the boys, Mads, and some of the other crazy scientists at Savage Gear have been working on since last year. So
they got the,
it's supposed to be coming soon.
They've got that going. They got
sign
that going
on. Sign up
on
the website for it.
Sign up. You can get your sign up. What else? A dual clevis pack.
What is
it? Okay, that's a one piece, but it allows for two.
Yeah.
Ooh.
It's supposed to be the cat's meow. It's supposed to be the ticket. So
cat's
it's
ass.
It's a new clevis system for running double blades.
For all you clevis folks.
For all you home builders.
The home builders.
Surely.
Got the Adams Custom Havoc. That little crankbait.
Yeah.
Soft tail. That's cool. Kind of a boutique-y, cool paint job kind of bait. Are those made of resin?
Yeah.
What do you do with your resin, Jay?
I don't know how to answer that. you know what else we got coming in? We got coming in Tuesday. We got like 6 more cool Musky Shop hoodies.
New hoodies.
Yep.
New and exciting apparel.
Much more apparel
still
coming.
What do we got going on too? I'm looking here. I've just had such little signal. Oh, still got a heck of a deal going on the beasts. Working through the beasts. Get them out there. What do you got? Power handles, rights and lefts, and who knows? It is tarred and feathered craziness. What did you think about that you were going through the archives at Muskie 360 and found that cassette tape of Stimpy Head Road? That was pretty amazing.
Stimpy Tail Road. I don't know where that came from, but it's a heck of a recording.
Just a dusty cassette.
It's kind of like it's what do they call that? Southern rock? You know, it's like tinge of country, but it's also got that southern flavor to it.
Well, we'll play the unabridged version at the end of Stimpy Tail Road there.
Just a taste at the beginning.
There was a taste.
Oh, I gotcha. Yeah.
You got a second verse there. Might involve stealing a Ranger. Who knows? there's
Dick
that.
Stimpy and his son. Yeah.
Crazy. You're doing what you can do. Anyway, gonna run my mouth for a minute. We do have some Q&A, but I thought it'd be meritorious to run my mouth about the fall transition, because I think this is a three-phase thing, right? We are right now in Blades and Topwater. Number one.
Yeah.
This is going to be Blades, Topwater, Shallow Fish, Twitch Baits. Don't discredit Slammer Fatty or a Baby Depth Raider. Or
a crane. We got some cranes in,
right?
Yeah. I forgot to tell you.
And that is going to be the jam for a minute. We'll go more into that. Number two, trolling. Right? Yep. It's going to happen. And then we get to sucker time, right? But where we're at right now, I don't care where you're at in the northern habitat range, but southern stuff, that's a way different animal. But, you know, Indiana, Illinois, all the heavy hitter stuff here, right? I mean, I went through freaking yesterday driving back, and I'm in Minnesota, and it was hot, right? But the winds were already screeching, right? Sure. And that's not going to last long. You got a little bit of a freak hot going on in a couple places, but things are cooling off and it's going to pick up. So, you know, with the shallow bite, it's not that dissimilar from the spring bite. And I think if you were dialed in early in the year, right, the same methodology, but the willingness to get nasty shallow, I mean, that and something else, me and Jay were actually talking about last night, shallow swim baits. And I will tell you, I think swim baits are doing better this year, at least for me, than blades have, right?
For a lot of people.
You know, it's that old trope of you know, that we gotta do different blade combos and we gotta do this combo. Do something different that runs in the same kind of depth range.
Mm.
Which is a shallow swim bait for high up blades and a deep swim bait for that. That's another tease, man. I've got to shift gears. I don't want to blow a tranny here, but I'm going to shift gears.
You don't want to blow a tranny.
I thought about that.
It's not a good experience.
It was a tough day. You know, you blow one tranny and you just go, man, it's going to cost me. Going to cost a lot.
Parking lot of the Culver's
blew a tranny sitting right there.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to take it to the mechanic after that, folks. Yep. You know, you can't fix that at home.
No, thank God it wasn't a diesel too.
Anyway, so oh man, what I was gonna say.
Hey, what were you saying?
I can't even remember.
Me
now
either.
I was going somewhere and I went somewhere else. Oh, the big
tease, the swim baits.
So my Canada experience,
mm-hmm,
was great. I had a lot of fun, right? But I got really swim baity this year, and I had the prototype for the Magnus, right? You've seen it. I was actually showing Jay some stuff. We'll have some teasers on that pretty soon. But it is I'll leave it at this, highly versatile swim bait-ish kind of thing. It's a different animal, right? We'll get there later. But I told Jay, I walked in last night and I said, he was like, what are they eating? And I said, one bait. And I was cobbling it together for, 7 weeks at this point? You know, just gone forever.
You just had the one.
I had one, a final prototype. Yeah, all black. And I went, man, this thing's doing it in high, bright sun, dead flat calm. And it was disgusting. So I'm excited about that because I've got to leave. Actually, leave in here, go home for a minute. Then I go back to Budapest, going to Hungary again because of that. The big award shows, the big trade shows over in Europe. So there's going to be a bunch of Magna stuff there I'm going to share with you. And some other sneaky stuff I've got up my sleeve, Jay. Look at that. Can you actually see in my sleeve?
Uh-huh.
There's things in there.
Yeah.
Got things in that sleeve. Yeah. So that's going to be fun. But yeah, the swim bait thing is this shallow bite. What I'm getting at is yes, blades, topwater, crane baits are going to be one of my pick. Maybe not the slammer fatty if we're in the real shallow stuff, but regular slammers, your cranes, your shallow or your baby depth raiders, anything that's a twitch bait, right? I think that's going to play because what you'll see is you're going to have this brief period where regardless of what happens climactically, they're going to have the propensity to be shallow, right? It's a cooling and a warming thing. It's a bait fish movement thing. So gearing up for that, thinking about that, Jay, you showed me you were on the rainbow flowage and the amount of weeds that were coming off already.
Yeah, they're breaking up. They're breaking up. I'm not seeing too much of a heavy, like, dissolve. You know, sometimes weeds die, they turn brown real fast.
Right, right.
Sometimes it provides all of a sudden you'll get an incredible bloom, which signifies kind of that pre-turnover period, which was what we're talking about today.
Right, right.
We're at stage one.
Of your
three-point countdown there.
Right.
And, and you were talking about the same thing in Canada just before you left.
Oh, yeah, we were talking about some areas where
weeds were starting to go away. So
they were breaking out. It seemed like early to me, the way that, like, you know, the decay, and you know, they just start going.
Yeah, it does. And
you know, some of that, now, in some bodies of water, the weeds are going to hold on strong as they can for a hot minute. But what I'll tell you is that, you know, if you're in a situation where it's really heavy weeds, you know, like some of these North Woods lakes or some of your Midwest stuff where it's just going to hold on to the bitter end, you know, juxtapose that with throwing a slop master or a Steve's meat grinder or a tailgate or two, you know what I'm saying? Where you can get it up there and come out weed free, you know, and then you've got that thing with the fall in Minnesota, the sandgrass thing that happens. Why, right? Way, way, way up on the pencils, right? Lapices, pencils in Spanish, I think.
I'm not sure.
But you get right up in the pencils and you're going to have these shallow fish. So, you know, it's that transition because you go from this summer thing where it's mid-depth and we're right back to that edge bite, top waters. I was crushing on top water too, just crushing on top water. But the name of the game, I think, minus Minnesota. Minnesota fish are a different breed. They want everything fast and crazy. But I think with the shallow water bite is coming in with that same kind of springish strategy, not from a bait size standpoint, but from a speed control thing, right? And coverage. That's the one thing I'll tell you that I see every year this time of year is you still got to get close to them. Right, it's not going to be this matter of the fish are coming unglued. They're tucked up there. Then there's plenty of bait fish. You know, Jay, when like what you're seeing, like the little Walters and the panfish and the crappie. What are they pushing up to, or what's happening there?
Starting to in areas. Haven't been on much lake water. I've been on more river system water the last week. Haven't fished much, but when I have been out, that's what I've been noticing.
Yeah.
Is they're right up in the thick stuff.
Yeah.
The panfish.
Right.
The bait fish. Seeing action, you know. They call me Mr. Light and Variable. That's seems to be when I do get out what the winds are doing. And that's something really significant because you can.
But why? You know, even when it's slow, you like your women heavy and volatile.
What's that? I'm not even listening. What? Hello. Nah.
Hello.
No, you're seeing more than you can when it's real choppy, and that's where the baitsman kind of staging as opposed to deep breaks. So out there anyway.
Yeah, get in shallow. So phase one, pretty simple. We're gonna get in shallow. We're gonna cast our blades, our spinner baits, our top waters. I'm my goodness, Dive and Rise plays heavy this time of year too. Right, your Suics and your Titans. So it's kind of a open open cattle call of what will work. There's obviously, like I said, we keep leaning on blades and topwater because 'tis the season. Your shallow swim baits, but don't discredit the with thick cabbage, your spinner baits and your Titans, your diving rise, your bobbies, your Suics, all that stuff.
Yeah, only thing I caught fish on last week was diving rise.
Yeah, freaking slaying on Titans.
I had fish moving on. Yeah,
smacking. But that's kind of where we're at now. A smart man plans ahead, right? The next phase is going to be that drop back down, right? Before they stage for this sucker stuff, before they stage for that, getting serious about early fall trolling, right? A lot of guys think, you know, pre-ice up and late season stuff, it's time to troll. No. The big girls, what I'm kind of dialed in, I was sad to leave, because what was getting me was I started to see Megasaurus Rexes show up shallow, right? And show up on the outside edge, the close inside edge. So if you think, you know, it's cute and all, a 40-incher pushed up in the cabbage, right? Big Mama is just right off the edge. And I think that's overlooked. So there's going to be a different push from the bigger caliber fish where, you know, yeah, okay, if you got to get one in the boat, go throw your blades, go throw your topwater, have a good time, fish in the net, whammity, shmammity, schmackety-backety, right? You did it. Whoop-de-doodle. If you want a big fish, you can take advantage of it in phase one, this early stuff with the outside edge, that first major break into deep water where the big girls will push in, right? Because, Jay, we're talking about walleyes. How often do the biggest of big walleyes come up shallow? How often do the biggest of big muskies come up shallow? They'll kind of linger on the outside edge of that zone, right? So you can take advantage of the 40s and the 36s and the you know, whatever, hanging out there in your mid-40s and all the cute ones, the ones you can grab by the ears, right?
Mm-hmm.
Grab them by, let me say this as a rejoiner. Hanging out in Canada, the amount of people that freak out that I will grab a freaking 36 to a 40-inch fish by the top of the head and just like that. Grab them by the ears. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Keep them out of the net. That's a whole other video. That's why I have a gap, like a giant hole in my wrist, too, right now. It's a war wound. But, you know, you don't want to get a mid-30s all tangled up in the net and hurt them. You grab them by the head and
sure.
Pop right. It. Do not try that at home, folks.
Yeah, accidents are going to happen when right. you do that, but, you know, you're also kind of in line for a quick release that way, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Grabbing,
like you said, not much net mauling going on when
there's no net involved.
Tangled. No net involved.
Oh, my left hand is a musky cradle. Just right there by the freaking
BKK magnet.
BKK magnet.
How did that hurt? That one hurt.
Dude, that's a rip. I took a pretty good ripper right there.
Let me see.
Right there in the wrist. It's that was that was a 7-otter.
That's pretty close to a juggler. What do you call that? An artery.
Well, you've got an artery and plenty of tendons there too.
Dang!
But you know, grab them by the freaking ears. Okay. Don't be a wimp. Okay, do not do what I'm telling you.
Don't listen to him, folks.
Do not listen to grabbing 40-inch muskies with your hands. Anyway, depends on how they're hooked and you see them coming in. But the cute ones are in the grass. And every now and again, Big Mama will slide up.
Well, yeah.
Right? And it's like what happens all the time. Hear me. How many? This guy walks into the muskie shop, right? This is a bad joke. Guy walks into the muskie shop. There's a rabbi, a fib, and a... but a guy walks in.
Guy walks into a muskie shop.
Right. But I don't know what the punchline is, but it's going to be ugly. But somebody comes up to yourself or me or they're gabbing about it. I saw the biggest fish ever. It came up once. We tried all day long. We kept looking. You know what I'm saying? Like, we could never move it again or it just disappeared. The big fish, kind of like ghosts on them, right?
Yeah.
Well, there's just this microscopic tiny time frame where the super tankers will move in that shallow, and they're usually under the boat or right on the back or like behind you. right? Even in this fall transition, where if you think like, okay, Vilas, Oneida counties up here, or Metro Minnesota, or wherever, like pressured water, this fish has had enough time to go, I don't want what's happening up there. That's how you get abducted into a net, right? There's pressure. There's all this desensitization. All these litanies of things, less.
So what you're saying, big fish, I'm talking big fish. Big muskies have like this fear factor of shallow water just because of their experience.
If we're in pressured water, yeah. Right.
Sure.
If we're in the
whole thing when they were juveniles, they had the, you know, we've talked about this before. I mean, bird predation, mm-hmm. all these risk elements.
Been there, done that. Yeah.
Yeah, and not to mention that it's tight. They're big. Tight. They got huge bodies now, right. and they're less mobile and able to spring
That's
around.
That's why I like them too.
You know, congested crap where there's weeds and cover and all that.
Well, and the other thing I would kind of throw out there in this. You know, we got this microcosm going on, is the days and we had it happen a few days ago. It was so close to the biggest fish of the year for me. So close. Good buddy of mine was fishing with me and had one come in, didn't know it was there. Second turn of the figure eight, bait in mouth, mega tanker. The cast might have landed in a foot of water. And figurating in 3 feet, right? That was a shallow water push-up. However, there were no small ones present.
Yeah.
And that's what I've often seen, is they don't want to compete either. Yeah. So pick your poison. If a guy fishing Metro Minnesota stuff might go, they're conditioned. Whatever. Depending on where you're at, there's two factors that I think that keep the biggest of the biggest out of the shallows until super specific events we cannot determine, right? Mm-hmm. Like people, when are the 55s moving up? Well, I saw a 54, 55 come in with an open mouth and 3 feet of water that was catchable, and the cookie crumbled the wrong way for us that day. But it's rare as hen's teeth, right? It's rare when you go in and you're moving 36s and 31s and 42s and you see Mega Mama up there competing with them. So is it pressure or is it competition? Right? Now, the juxtaposition of that being, is it also too, you know, what is the biggest fish in your body of water? It doesn't have to be a double nickel. We all want one of those, but sometimes the biggest fish, it could be a 4-footer.
Sure.
Do they want to sit there and compete with the dinks?
I'd say most of the time, no.
No. And when I see these big mamma jammas, you're not moving anything else. And it's not like we're throwing,
they've claimed their territory, but for themselves.
No,
at that point,
I think they move
like
in when nothing else is there. That's what I think. I think they move in like in off times, right? They move in when it's kind of like, right? So this fish, okay. What I can tell you is this, dealt with a pretty nasty front. Right, went out, plenty of opportunities before the front hit. Things looked awesome, right? This is the next sunrise post-frontal, right? So sunrise at post-frontal, wham, bam. There she is in all her glory. On a spot that is productive, right? It's a known factor. It's not like I drifted into something new or something of that nature. But you go, ooh. Okay, now I understand. You know, she took that opportunity to slide in when there's less competition, but now there's bait present. Don't get me wrong. You know, so one could argue, there's no pure answer on this. One could argue the smaller fish are not there because the big fish is present. We don't know that for sure. To me, it makes sense from a competition standpoint, right? Where, you know, something that typically holds 3 or 4 muskies, they don't want to go up there and play that game. They just want to get it over with. And I think it's just like the older you get, hell in life, I just want to get shit over with. You know, it's like the pomp and circumstance after a while of,
Well, again, we talked about this in the past. How many times have you talked to a buddy how many times have you seen online where someone is posting or talking about in detail, not just sketchy, someone that, you know, has some experience level, the conditions that were occurring when they caught the biggest fish of their life, the biggest muskie of their life.
Yeah.
High skies.
Yeah.
Northeast winds.
Right.
Post-frontal.
Bad stuff.
Not good, not conducive muskie fishing weather scenario, yet that big one went in without competition, clearly, because nothing's going, nothing's active.
Oh,
there's giant.
When I look at, you know, flipping through photos of my phone or whatever, my biggest muskies have all been like the next morning.
We've talked about that.
Yeah, the next morning or the next evening.
You and I have talked about it,
All of them, with the exception of one, and I'm not talking 50s here, I'm talking better than that, have come the next AM sunrise or the sunset post frontal on thinking, computing. Hold on, let me load here. Well, nobody would know the difference, but I can pretty much tell you all of those have come off of spots that I would call like pretty consistently productive spots as well, right? You know what I'm saying? It's not like I went to Magic Rock and threw a magic bait, you know what I'm saying? Or I went to some funky place or did something different. It would be like, no, I'm trying to put a fish in the boat, and then Donkey Kong shows up on a known on a spot that's a known quantity, right? You know it's going to hold muskies. You know it's going to be this. You know you're, because when conditions are post frontal, you're kind of dick in the dirt, so you're just trying to stick with what you know. You're not out there exploring new and exciting locations. Does that make sense? You know, you're not going to just jump out there and go, oh, let me try something new. You're going to known quantities structurally that are conducive to that, and
yeah,
that's been the big
yes and no. Yes and no. I guess it's seasonality, too. If it's in the middle of summer and it's just like expectations are low, you know, you do your three-point check and things aren't really happening. And sometimes that is the time utterly to explore something new, new technique, new areas. It's just like, okay, I've never tried, you know, rock this time of the year or whatever.
Well, that's a different thing, though, which for me is like, I'm going to, you know, your spots, and I hate the word spots, but people know their spots that they produce muskies, and you double down in bad conditions. And it's just the complexes and things that typically do it. Anyway, we're on a big fish tangent here, but the thought for me at this juncture is I'm going to take a whiz. Hold on. Sorry for the brief interruption there. So we had a bathroom break and the squirrel talk.
Oh, the squirrels back there, huh, Steve?
Tons of squirrels.
Oh, the acorns.
Should have lit them up. Anyway, back to big fish. Mm-hmm. The thought is that these big fish are going to not move in super shallow all the time, right? There are more under the boat and slightly behind the boat than you want to admit, which brings in some shallow-ish, which is a relative term, shallow trolling early right now in this phase one stuff. That can really smoke a mega hog, you know?
Right, right.
Where I'm telling you, if you're a caster and you go, okay, I'm going to cast, you know, we're in some inland lake and some typical little stuff, whatever. You know where the weed edge is by now, right? You're not reinventing the wheel. You know where they've been staging. You've done your homework. Things look good. Follow that up with a trolling pass to that weed line, you know, or the break line right outside of that. With you know, a moderate presentation. You could go with a standard depth rater. You can go with you know, a mag crankbait or something like that and do a 3.5-4 mile hour pass. Take you no time at all just to check the outer perimeter. And that's going to pay dividends where you're going, okay, if I'm fishing, you know, shallow bay, shallow edges, shallow stuff, blah, 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 blah. Check the edge. Like when you're, and if you've not done this, you know where you start your pass on a spot, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know where you, okay, I pull into this every time. Now, I'm not a spot guy, but there's a lot of whatever. I'm taking it down to the most neophyte level. We're going to cast this. I pull in here. Just fire up the outboard at 3.5 miles an hour, you know, and do the outside edge of what you would do on the trolling motor, maybe a smidge deeper, right? If the troller's setting in 5, take her out to 15, take her to 10, run a short line, and watch the magic happen. You know, that is how you can really score some mega hogs here. And I would say, too, to the trolling thing of getting geared up for that. Oh,
there she is.
Take out that. Lay that now, that clack-a-lack.
You like that speed, 3.5, this time of year, stage one, versus more like, you know, the 2.5? Depending on the lure,
three to
too,
four, yeah. I mean, okay. 3.5 to 4 is just money, I think, all the time. But you can really start considering that out, that first break, man, that outside of if you're not troller brained yet, just cruise the outside edge of what you're fishing just a hair deeper, right? Just a hair deeper.
Sure.
And start where you're comfortable. And I say that because, you know, I'm not comfortable trolling, or it's not something I'm doing, or whatever that might be. If you know an area and you know it produces muskies, you know what's out there. You're not going to snag. You're not going to hit this. You're not going to hit that. Schlub some baits over the side, or throw one bait over the side and hit her, right? You know, up here, if it's a one-liner thing, you know, yeah, you've got the option of fishing just about anything, but, you know, throw down a depth rater or throw down whatever, or blades with a rod tip down, and check that outer perimeter, because that's where I think most of the big ones are, right, in this staging, where we're going to have that shallow push out, then instantly, just it'll happen out of nowhere, they're all going to go kind of mid-level to deep. That's a coming. That's when you're getting your face to your trolling world, you know, pushing into sucker land and pre-ice up. But think ahead, because everybody, what are they, and it's a loaded question, right? What are they hitting? What are they doing? Well, that kind of information disseminates for weeks after the bite has already started and everybody else is behind. Get ahead of the bite is what I'm trying to tell you, right? Everybody else is going to be out there casting and blasting as shallow as possible. Be the idiot that's trolling and everybody's going, he's not catching any fish. Be the guy that's on that first break before everybody else is, right? Because by the time the news hits your ears, it's already been going on, and by the time it matriculates down to everybody that the fish are doing this, there's guys that have been milking that rat long before, right? So think ahead, think smart, mix up your game plan. The thing is this, condition-wise, hitting that outside edge. Now, can you accomplish the thing? Same thing with rubber. Yeah, you could fish deep and mid, but just that coverage, and I'm really, really doubling down on this year, because the propensity for fish everywhere I've been, which is pretty much everywhere, right? And in the span of the last 3 months, I've been across the habitat range, I think, from north to south, not east to west, but pretty damn close, where minnow style baits, swim baits, things of that nature are cooking with gas versus blades. You know, some of these places like the Western Arm of Eagle, Danny Herbeck and me were out there. They love to chase blades there. They won't even look, right? They ain't even looking. Why? I don't know, but they just aren't. Swim baits, right? Krakens, you know, your burbot tube and stuff of that. So I like, instead of doing the fall rubber, throwing to the deeper stuff and working it back in, I think this is going to be a better trolling year for guys that are willing to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these fish have been tight to cover and structure all year. I mean, you're going to have your suspendos regardless, but thinking ahead and mixing that in, because you're going to see a difference of, do the cast and blast in the morning and then back her off and hit those edges. Troll. You know, come in on the major and kind of fill the gaps and the voids, or split your majors, which is my favorite thing to do, where you'll see that's going to play. The other thing I'll tell you is this. Everything I've seen this year thus far has been major driven.
You said split the majors? I didn't follow that.
Yeah, you got a two-hour major, man. Unless, let's say you pull in and you cast and blast and you're smoking them. Mm-hmm. But if nothing's happening during that major in the first 30, 40 minutes and you're confident, we're skipping phases here. You have done your homework. You know the seasonality. You know what I should be throwing. You know this, you know that. If it ain't clicking, man, get on that freaking motor. Drag some baits. Right. Because, guys, if you've never trolled during a major, it can be scary. You're covering so much more water. I'm talking if you got multiple line options, too, it's even better.
No doubt.
Two guys just went to four rods in the water. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. You got a three fish 15 minutes. I've seen it. I've done it where... If they're really on the major, but they're on the first break, holy cannoli, hold on to your hat.
Yeah, don't judge your trolling experience from, hey, nothing's happening right now. Let's try trolling for a while.
Well, that's always it. We've covered that in the past.
Yeah. I mean, you're not doing yourself a favor unless you're trolling.
It's not an afterthought anymore. Like, sure. I'll give it to everybody. Like, yes, trolling in July and August. I mean, neighbor Steve and I, we did some damage trolling up there, you know, but that was because the conditions kind of called for it. But yeah, I want to cast, you know, I want to throw blades or I want to throw top waters and do all this stuff. But when we get to September and it ain't summer anymore, boys, right? There's always an option where you're summer trolling. I get it. Like, man, whatever, you know, unless you're old, you know, or lazy. I'm both. But being able to mix that in your game plan immediately over the next couple weeks is going to be huge. And then you're ahead of the bite for phase two, which is trolling. The trollers come out in full force late September, early October, where they are producing way more muskies than most people in the habitat range, right? It's kind of like the skill set. So, you know, July and August is casting time. And then after a while, and I remember a great story about, you know, dad was on Eagle one time and there was no weeds left. They're all dead already. And he caught two off weeds, but, you know, his buddy was trolling and caught four, you know. And you go, get ahead of this curve because don't phase two, and there's not real phases. I'm making it up, but it always happens this way. Phase one is Lenny Krexball and Ricky Klobuchar caught him a 4-footer over on Suckatobin on topwater. Now everybody's going to spend the next month throwing topwater, opposed to that transition is happening and you're ahead of the curve instead of behind the curve, where you can play in both worlds. That's what I'm trying to get at, right? Where if you're playing both sides of the field and you're doing it effectively and efficiently, you're on a different level. You're just doing, you're doing what everybody else will not do. You know, everybody's going out, they got their game plan. Their game plan is blades and topwater. And, you know, they're kicking rocks coming up the docks a lot of days because, yeah, they got a 31, but where are the big ones at? The big ones are not where everybody wants them to be. You know, that's the thing. Where are the big fish? Well, if you got 10 boats out here and they're hucking and chucking shallow, guess where they're not? Right? Guess where they're not? They're not there. They're not rocket scientists here. They'll screw up. They'll move. Somebody will see them getting it out and effective. Now, the thing for me is during this period, and this is a quick thing, like a 2-week thing, then a 2-week thing, and then we're just into suck, right? Which is, if you are dialed in on that first break bite trolling, and you know what they want, you know your speed, okay, making it up, they want a freaking, you know, a legend plow at 3 miles an hour, well, just wait till you just keep taking that up until the ice out, right? You just dialed in faster. You're ahead of the, you are the curve. Everybody else is behind you, right? Everybody else is behind you. And that is kind of the thing where you've always got fresh fish. You've always got the game going on where everybody else is just trying to play catch up. What do you think, Jay?
Yeah. Fall is, I'm trying to think of something profound to say, Steve.
Profound. Well, are you gonna, I mean, are you fall quote is a tricky. A Robert Frost poem.
Summer is as straightforward as it gets.
Yeah,
it's not easy fishing, granted, but I think it's easier to define.
It's accessible.
It's easier to peg.
Yeah. Shallow weeds.
Once
throw
fall
shit.
Comes in, I think it's worse than the springtime in terms of really getting dialed in where muskies are going to be.
Well,
and of
that's
course,
why I'm telling you
most
how.
Of us yeah. are looking for big fish.
Right.
So. We're not looking for 32s. Take it. It's fun.
Right.
But when you're searching for big fish, a lot of times I think most of the people out there are not exactly doing what they should be doing. And I think that's, you know, the stage one and two especially. Stage three is just flat out bizarre.
What? Sucker fish?
The cold season.
The
cold water season of musky fishing. You know, around here, it's really hard to, you're looking at like post turnover. You're looking at water temps constantly falling.
Right.
You're looking at the opposite working sometimes. Okay. I wish it was sunny right now in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You don't
right.
wish that in the summer.
No.
You'd pray for some clouds to roll in.
Right.
You know, in the late fall, you're like, gosh, like it is right now, Steve.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, there's a little bit of wind, but the sun's warming up the water a little
uh-huh.
bit now. And for some reason, that'll trigger fish.
Right. That's just backwards,
Lane.
Yeah,
it's backwards.
We're post turnover. We'll get there.
Yeah.
that's a whole
day.
Other. That is for the frozen chosen
yeah.
and the crazies, because you go,
yeah,
we're just in nutty land. But like I'm telling you guys, get ahead of your bite. Don't wait for somebody to tell you what's happening. Be the guy that figures out what is happening and do it in an intelligent manner.
What's
do
happening it, was yesterday.
Right.
It's not
yeah.
now.
Do it analytically. Anyway, I'll shut up with my ramblings. Got a couple Q&A's here. Why not? Taylor, we are driving from West Virginia. Yee yee!
There you go.
Yeah, sorry. West by God. We're driving from West Virginia to Eagle Lake on September 19th and fishing for 2 weeks. What is our best strategy for this time in Canada? When to make the best use of our time there? Also, what seems to be working as far as lures? So, you know, September 19th, couple weeks on Eagle, pushing on to October. If you've not heard it, Danny Herbeck and Joe Cooper are doing the Canada Muskie podcast, which is about 20 minutes of a fishing report. It is on the app. They'll kind of keep you get dialed in. Danny Herbeck guides on Eagle, kind of Myers Bay, Western Arm into the Central Basin. I don't know where you're staying. What I can tell you is this. I've been there. I just left, but I've spent plenty of time on Eagle getting into the cold stuff. There will be some remnant weed bite, but there's not a lot this year anyway, right?
Right. It's the weeds didn't grow abundantly.
Well, there's a rusty crayfish issue, and they just simply didn't use it. Then you've got suspendos. What I can tell you on Eagle is this. When you find one, there are 10, right? They are grouped up, they are packed up, and they are deep. Krakens, 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 kraken, right? The krakens are kraken. Danny Herbeck's burbot tube, that thing's kraken. Tubes are the jam right now on Eagle. Yes, some, you know, dipshit McGee got one on topwater. Good for him. Consistency, right? Quality and consistency are the key here. You're going to have to throw some heavy baits, some probative baits. Titans. Or killer then, your shallow stuff, diving risey, unless we have a big warm up, which you're not going to get up there. Go diving rise, go kraken, go freaking swim bait. Still, the big shallow swim baits, right? And it's weird for me because for years swim baits didn't do a lot for me. And they're coming around. Swim baits are pikey. You know, it's kind of a pike bait. Euro and all this stuff when I'm over in Europe. And they kind of lean on. I've
the
said
origins.
It before. But
right.
Europe, like, okay, so if you take musky guys, whatever, any musky guy. most of them lean on blades, on bucktails, right?
Yeah.
And we kind of poke at that, but the Europeans lean on swim baits. Like,
for sure.
Right. So you take Gunter Shylock from frickin', you know, Slimelander versus Heb Hebson from Amsterdam. They do the same thing, but one does it with a swim bait and one does it with blades. They just, that's what they huck and they're comfortable. Where I don't know if it's a pressure thing. I don't know if it's a forage thing. Swim baits have been good in Canada. I would have a couple in my back pocket, right? Super sharp hooks, and be willing to, if when I'm throwing shallow, I'm going to be throwing there. Eagle, I don't know what section you're fishing, but I'll tell you what, September is rocks and reefs. You better know where they're at. And the deal with reefs in Canada is not a rock top where, oh, it's a 10-foot rock top. You need to spend the time and you need to dissect the connectivity and the tendrils. There's a reef on Eagle called Alien. It's got tendrils sticking out. When you know where that is and the sections of that reef, you might have two on one point where, not a point, but one place on this reef where it connects to the main basin or it connects to the transitional zone. You have to be very specific, right? You've got to be really conscious of how we're casting and making sure we're getting coverage, because I've done it up there a million times. Somebody's on Sanctuary Reef right over in Boulder and they're throwing and they watch them and go, well, they didn't fish that right. I can go right behind them. Right? They just went in there, threw at the top of the reef, went, there's nothing here, and moved on. Opposed to, it's not just the top, it's the sides, it's the composition of that rock complex, right? Some have sharp drops on one side. So be cognizant, pay attention of that. That's going to be super important for you to get dialed in there for sure. Let's look here. Colin. My name's Colin. I wanted to contact you. Clog up your inbox, but blah, blah, blah. Oh, okay. Very nice email. He says, I guess in summarization, I really wanted to reach out and express my gratitude. Muskie fishing has helped me through some real tough times. He absolutely smoking some fish, loves the podcast. Thank you so much, Colin. Meow.
Thanks, Colin.
Much appreciated. Congratulations. Jeff, I'm glad to hear Doc Boy Randy made it through another season in the cutthroat business of slinging ice.
There you go.
I fish the same. Boys,
aren't we all?
It's tough.
It is tough,
it's,
huh?
It's a tough game.
Okay.
Man can't make a lot of money selling bags of ice at a dock.
But it's possible.
But you got to do what you love.
I see.
You know. Jeff says, I fished the St. Louis River Duluth Superior Harbor. It's pretty big body of water. Yeah, it's pretty big with good fish. There's everything from shipping channels and a lot of slips to mud flats to shallow weed beds. It's overwhelming trying to find a spot to fish. Any ideas? The water's very tannic and muddy. Literally drove over it last night.
Yeah.
Right there. I actually commented to Jay today over lunch how windy it was and just choppy as heck, you know. That's some serious water. So, less about where you're fishing on the St. Louis and more about dealing with big bodies of water, right? Let's break it down into manageable chunks, right? You don't go conquer the mountain. You conquer the molehill, right? So, let's say you're in wherever. You're in Nevada and you're fishing Lake Mead. That's huge. There's no muskies there, but, you know, how do we contend with big bodies of water that have a lot to offer? What I would do is go one day where I'm not focused on catching a muskie. You go, well, I only got Saturdays to fish, right? One Saturday of your life spent exploring and cognizant of what we're looking for, which I'll get to, will pay dividends for a long time, right? So what I would recommend you do is you spend one day and you find two shallow zones, two mid zones, two deep zones that check all the boxes, and you're able to find, oh, this under these conditions there are bait fish here. I'm seeing them on my down scan. I'm seeing them however. And you get comfortable with those and you just learn everything you can about them. Right? You mark a bunch of waypoints. You get that under your belt. right? We identify positive fish structure in zones that they're using, because in a body of water like that, there's too much of a good thing, right? So I'm going to break it down in small chunks opposed to running hell and half acre. Find a few things that look good and learn them so you have a great mental visualization, a really deep understanding of how the composition plays there. And let's say you find 6, 7, 8, right? And you're very cognizant of what you're doing. You're not going, here's the shallow zone, it looks great. You go, does this connect to deeper water? Does this have structural elements that play? Are bait fish even present, right? And you learn that, and say you find 8 spots in that one day. Well, if 3 of them are good, right, consistently, that's worth just weight in gold.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Break it down into small, excuse me, manageable chunks. You're not, when you order a pizza, they slice it for a reason. Except unless you're Jay. He just tries to try to throat the whole thing.
It's already broken down.
It's one of the worst things. Well, that's what, got to take a drink of my water here.
That sounds like really a challenging system of musky fishery.
There's biggies there. There's big boys.
Yeah, if you can't get good solid information from a friend or something in terms of like where to start, yeah, and it's going to probably require a little bit of homework, like you just described.
You got to spend time. Anything worth doing takes time and takes effort, which is break it down into small chunks. Find your, there's weeds there. There's vegetation. You know, find you a bunch of weed beds. Don't fish them. Just find them. Then find you a bunch of mid-depth stuff. All right? Then find you some deep stuff. Find you some humps. Find your channels. Find that. And then work back through them. All right? And really get a good grasp. It's how you learn an area where what will happen. And again, you spend the day, sun up to sundown, exploring and really looking. I don't mean looking and go, this looks great, and you move on. Like, is there anything here? What is it, not fish-wise, but what's the bottom composition? Is it harder? Is it soft? Well, I don't know how to read my graph that way. Drop freaking something over the side of the boat and find out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever. Drop a bucket. I don't care. Figure it out. Once you understand what you're contending with, and then we come back on a subsequent date and something clicks, and you catch a big fish, or you catch a good fish, or you catch a fish, you put a muskie in the net, you go, oh crap, this is what's happening right now. Now I'm looking for similar things, right? And what you've got to kind of get a codex, right? You can't decipher the code without some kind of guide, right? It's like freaking taking hieroglyphs from freaking Egypt. Well, how do we do that? The Rosetta Stone. You got to get a primer, a codex going of what's happening on any given body of water. So you have to bust your ass till you get the baseline, right? What is the basics of this? And then we play seasonality in and around that, right? But once you have a codex, you know where to go from there. You know, you just kind of decipher the mystery and interpret the data based upon what you're seeing. So, like, anytime I'm on a new lake, and I've had to do it professionally a billion times now, where it used to scare the crap out of me or something like that, it's like, Jay's, come up and film something. We got to catch some fish. Okay, where are we going? I don't know. We'll figure it out. We catch fish, which is, you've seen it a million times. We're always gabbing about, say, all right, give me a second. And I spend 10 minutes with a map, and I think, oh, that looks right. That looks right. That looks right. That looks right. Okay, we go through that. We fish them effectively. That's how you do it. But once you have kind of your Rosetta Stone for any body of water you're fishing, right? Because the dichotomy or the breakdown that we always deal with is this. We're talking about fish that have a habitat range of thousands of miles. Not per fish, I'm saying across the continent. From turbid to tannic to clear, right? to no wind to a ton of wind, to no pressure to a ton of pressure, to boat traffic to shipping channels from lakes to rivers to this.
Yep.
They have the same habits, but they all have different kind of little propensities based on where they're at. If you break down your water in small chunks following the rules of structure fishing, right? We don't have time for that in one episode. Read the book. And you use your three-point check, because I'm telling you, find mid-shallow deep areas. And find a bunch of them. And then break them down and analyze them. And if you literally go, I don't give a shit what anybody thinks. If you have to get a tin pail with a rock in it and drop it over the side of your boat and hit the bottom and drag an area to see if it's mud or rock, who cares? Right? There will be no trophies handed out today. Figure it out. And you go, theoretically, the muskies in your area are using muddy bottom 10 foot in the summer up to this and that. You now know more than 99% of people they're fishing for. Right? And this is something I want to say anyways. Think about this on the boat. I've learned more about baits and structure, not trying to catch muskies. And I used to say it all the time, and it's something to say again. The best way to learn to use a bait is to not musky fish with it, is to go watch it in a pool or watch it on a body of water where you're not worried about musky fishing and observe the bait, right? The more time you spend being observant pays higher dividends, right? And I think it weirds people out to go, take it down to your bass lake and learn how to work your baits. You're not worried about you might get a follow and screw it up. Stop thinking about catching fish and start thinking about learning how to use your tools, right? Followed by, stop worrying about trying to catch fish. Start breaking down your water so you have a mastery, right? Or we're headed towards a mastery of understanding. So when you demystify their environment, it becomes clear, right? When I say things like muskies are on rock complexes with weeds in conjunction, that was the story of my summer, right? Well, how many of those do you know, right? I know, you know, say 25 on Wabagoon, like the back of my hand. Well, I got 25 areas I know I can fish because muskies are on rock weed complexes adjacent to deep water. Now, out of the 25, how's the wind playing?
Right, right.
Right? Then how's the forage bait playing? So you need a big Rolodex of information that you narrow down. If you want to catch muskie consistently, I'll tell you right now, forget about it. Let's just cut the shit and be it there. I catch a lot of muskies, not from trying to catch muskies. I learn the composition. I learn the cardinal directions. I learn the interplay and the commingling of cover and structure, right? And I'm looking for shallow littoral zones, which are 12 feet and shallower, that hold vegetation in conjunction with good topography, good bathymetry, meaning rock complexes, meaning transitional zones, right? And you go in, you learn them. How do I navigate this? How do I do that, right? And then you mentally visualize how the wind or any climactic effect is hitting them, right? I have people on the boat, Jay, we're hanging out. How do you know the sun angle would be like this or that then, right? Where you have to visualize the entire lake and go, I need shady, weedy, rocky, sub 10 feet. And you go, boo, 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 I got three ideas. Well, the sun's at, you know, 7 o'clock. It'll be hitting this way from west to east. So what's going to be shaded? Like when we talk about, you know, I don't want to throw topwaters with the sun in the muskie's eyes. You have to understand and be able to compute mentally what the sun will look like, what the wind has done, and how things will freaking compile. Right? There's so much data to contend with. Wind, weather, sun angle, right? What's taking place there, and what is the composition there, and when do you arrive? Right? Because the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. It's rather Jay, how many days have you seen it not do that? It's been pretty consistent.
Sure.
Most days that holds true.
Yeah.
Right? So we know that will happen. That it's if it doesn't, we're not going to do any more podcasts. we'll probably take that week off.
Yeah.
That'd be a tough one. But so we take things that we know are consistent and we understand the cardinal direction of the lake. So we know that the sun will do this and this will do that. So that's a baseline. In conjunction with what is the composition of every area, because the way you break down, I've broken down shield lakes where, how did you do that? By not fishing. It's the hardest thing to do. It's the hardest thing you can do. And I'm giving you the keys to the castle right now. You spend 15 hours on a body of water learning, not fishing, not trying to catch, going in and checking things out and marking things on your graph, you have now done more exploration in a single day than most anglers will do in their entire life where they dumb into things. What? You're smirking, Jack.
No, I like your mention of shade earlier, too. I think that's a huge, huge player. And the sun angle is so much noticeably lower right now. So there's more
it's getting dark early. And things
that is a speeds huge up. Player.
Yeah.
And we still have relatively warm water, so it's not like, if it was later in the winter, we were just talking earlier about, how a warming situation in very cold water is usually more positive. But, right now, shade is...
No, shade's good. But
shade is like an added cover element.
It's an angular thing, and whether they can see or not, you don't want them breaking off in the sunlight, but and the other thing to say is this, you weren't always chasing the darkness, but also too, when sun's directly overhead in the fall too, it warms some shallow zones, things will move up. So those are some thoughts. Anyway, I've been rambling. We have the Dick Stimke Greatest Hits compilation. We're going to roll the full version here at the end. Guys, my travels are almost over. I'll be home for a couple weeks. We'll get back onto our rocking and rolling schedule here. As we've done pretty good. I think we missed one Sunday. I had to see a man about a horse, I believe, evening. But we've done pretty good for this summer. Yeah, we missed a couple last year. But, it's my schedule sucks.
Yeah.
It's fun. Learned a lot. Had a lot of fun. Anyway, guys, we're gonna roll on the Dick Stimke here. Jay Bird, say good afternoon.
Okay, guys, thanks a lot.
Avita Zane.
Bye-bye.